very pleased to say that my guest in the studio on the morning program right now is James Caruso. He is the acting US ambassador to Australia, or the proper title for it, I believe, is the Charge d'Affaires, though my French is poor, as listeners just heard.
As is mine.
Hi, it's nice to join you. You have a banking and finance background, and then you moved to the State Department, a career diplomat. You have been at the State Department for 22 years, I believe.
That's right.
So your background is economics, banking, and so on. You were part of the US team that negotiated the free trade agreement with Australia. Very well versed in economic affairs. That's why you're here. You're bringing a delegation of American business to do the rounds here in Western Australia and encourage more investment, more bilateral trade, and so on. And we'll talk about that soon. And while we're very pleased to have you, I do have to say it's something unusual for the United States not to have a permanent ambassador to Australia in place. Do we read anything into that?
No. Actually, when President Obama took over, it was about almost a year before Ambassador Jeffrey Bleich came in. So it's not unusual. We move at a stately pace.
In the Department of State.
Yes.
I won't ask you to comment on specific incidents or to defend specific incidents, but other than to note that this is an especially interesting, turbulent time in American politics as the Trump administration finds its feet. There's a new controversy around even overnight about intelligence sharing, whether the United States president has given information to another country that he should have or whether that he shouldn't have, and there's now public commentary around can America's allies trust the United States. Without asking you to comment on those incidents specifically, unless you'd like to, of course, how difficult is it to conduct the business of diplomacy when there's so much noise around this administration at home?
You know, the part of diplomacy is separating the signal from the noise. There's always a lot of noise now. There's no denying that right now there's more than ever. Tweets didn't exist when I entered the State Department. And we certainly didn't have a president who tweeted like this. But it's important to separate tweets from policy. And I focus on bilateral relations with Australia. That's pretty clear where that is, as signified by the visit of Vice President Pence to Sydney and by the Prime Minister's visit with the President in New York. So that's fine. In Asia, it's also pretty clear what our policy is, supporting our allies, working with our allies and with China to try and denuclearize the Korean Peninsula and trying to increase trade and investment in the region. So for me, that's what I focus on. This other stuff is, in fact, noise.
So it's often said, it's almost become a political cliche, Australian political leaders say it, American political leaders say it, that the relationship outlasts the party of the day. You've served in the State Department under Democrat administrations, under Republican administrations. What are the practicalities of that? How does the alliance continue to survive? How does the relationship survive and set aside the politics of the day?
Well, it's mostly because we have these relationships that are so broad and deep across not only all levels of government and the military and intelligence, but business to business, and as you're a perfect example, people to people. We are two peoples that have a global outlook that says government is by the consent of the governed. People have a right to speak up, that we should have as small a government as we can get away with while providing services to the people who vote for us. That business should be as unfettered as it possibly can be, provide the most jobs and most prosperity. So that global outlook isn't as common as you might think. And actually, the U.S. and Australia having a sort of a similar, slightly rebellious attitude, we get along incredibly well together because we're slightly jaundiced. Especially you guys.
We have been known to cast a cynical eye at things from time to time, that's true. My guest on the program is the acting US ambassador to Australia, James Caruso. He's here to lead a delegation on trade and the economy, and I think it's fair to say that the message is to look beyond resources. That's really what you're trying to convey to West Australian business, to West Australian government, to West Australian leaders, that there's a big wide world of opportunity out there, and it's not just about mining and resources, albeit that mining resources, oil and gas will continue to be always very important to this economy, in particular here in Western Australia.
Right. Look, I worked with our American Chamber of Commerce in Sydney. Most big American companies are based in Sydney or Melbourne. And it was very clear to me that there was insufficient recognition that this is a big, wide country, and Perth and WA really has to be taken a look at, especially with the change in government. We really should take the opportunity to meet the new leadership here. And also,
well, you'll have a chance in a moment because the Premier is actually going to be in the studio right after you.
We'll have to be very polite then. But also, of course, that you know, in the East, there's a lot of discussion about WA is going through this terrible decline and everyone's leaving like a bunch of lemmings. And I had a pretty good clue that wasn't the case. But I did want to understand, and our companies want to understand, what's the next thing? Yes, you have a once-in-a-generation boom in oil and gas and minerals. What comes next? How do you leverage the technologies you have developed to exploit these resources, such as self-driving vehicles? How can you convert that into the next thing for WA? And that's why our companies want to come here and understand.
And so just give us some of the names of some of the companies that are joining you, because it's not just the ones that we would ordinarily think of in the past as being carrying the flag for the American relationship economically with Western Australia, like your Chevrons, the big engineering services firms, and so on. You've got some technology companies with you as well.
That's right. We have Cisco, Salesforce, GE, 3M, just to name a few, Amazon Web Services. So clearly, they see opportunities here. At, you know, you have these five excellent universities. You have a young workforce. You have a lot of opportunity into whatever the next thing is, because you have a new government saying, what do we do? So we want to say, we Americans are here, we want to go with you.
You're going to go and visit, or you may have already visited, the Pawsey supercomputer.
We did.
Do you understand it? Because we talked about that last week on the program. I don't understand it. It's very interesting, though.
Oh, I understand it absolutely perfectly, and just don't ask me any questions.
It's apparently the world's most, the Southern Hemisphere's most powerful supercomputer, and you can use it for anything you like, including adding up an Excel spreadsheet, I'm told. But it is, I guess it's these sorts of technological innovations where the United States has been the leading innovator, especially through Silicon Valley and the like. Is this all a one-way relationship? Is it just a matter of US firms exporting their know-how to the rest of the world? Or how can we make sure here in Western Australia that it's a two-way mutually beneficial exchange?
Well, I think U.S. firms are looking for how to do business, and whether that's a joint venture or a research partnership with, like, Edith Cowan University, which has one of the best cybersecurity programs in the world, whether it's how to use the square kilometer array to how do you manage that much data, how do you mine that. That's big data questions that are useful across a range of issues. So I'm not smart enough to know what comes next. I just know there's stuff out there.
Can I ask you about the big picture of Australia's future? And we have, since World War II, unapologetically aligned ourselves and allied ourselves with the United States. In the 21st century, those who study foreign affairs talk about the rise of China. In many ways, we are somewhat ahead of the curve in terms of this question because of the necessity of our economic relationship, especially in Western Australia, with China. And so there's a lot of questions about, well, will Australia eventually have to choose? Will it have to diminish its relationship with the United States in order to preserve or extend its relationship with a rising China? Where do you stand on that question?
I think it's a false choice. You can walk and chew gum just as we do. We have actually an economic relationship with China in the U.S. that dwarfs that between Australia and China.
Which is not well understood in the public mind, I don't think.
All you have to do is, what is the biggest destination of Chinese foreign investment? It's not Australia. It's the U.S. It's enormous. Similarly, U.S. companies are investing enormously in China. So we have this a trade deficit to prove how big our trade relationship is, but also investment relationship. We also cooperate on everything on from environment to Somalia to Iran, global issues. But when we disagree, we say, here's where we disagree. We still cooperate across the range of areas. We would expect nothing less from Australia. We also don't expect Australia to be in lockstep with everything the U.S. does, whether it's the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, which we didn't join but you did, and a host of other issues. We are allies, but we're also friends, and friends sometimes disagree. And why Australia has such an amazing, powerful voice in Washington is because we know when you guys tell us something, it's what you really think. You're not trying to manipulate us or do some strange advantage. You're saying, I'm an Aussie, here's what I think, and we trust you. And this is why Julie Bishop and Mr. Payne and Mr. Pine basically go to Washington, pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm here, and they have open doors all across the aisle. That's not normal.
Last week, the retiring boss of ASIO here in Australia, Dennis Richardson, raised concerns about the extent of Chinese government influence here in Australia. Chinese state media having an influence with Chinese communities. There are other Chinese sources who have suggested that spying is happening here at a scale wider than perhaps we might appreciate. Is that a concern that the American government shares?
Well, I think it's important for all Western democracies to have their eyes wide open. We have a free and open media. We have free and open societies. And that openness sometimes can be used by people who want to manipulate things for their own advantage. So just be aware.
Be aware. Do we need to be more than aware?
I don't know. I just think when people see a source of news, whether it's on a tweet or a website, whether it's an insert in a newspaper, you say, what's the source of this? What is there an underlying agenda? I have a daughter, and I've told her from the time she was 5 years old, look at the source, not just the piece of information. So she grew up very cynical.
That's good advice. Sounds like she could have been a journalist. But we wouldn't wish that upon her. James Caruso, great pleasure to have you on the program this morning. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Gareth.
And hopefully you enjoy your time here in beautiful Western Australia.
I will.
All right. Thank you very much.